Welcome to In the Garden, hosted by UC Master Gardeners on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. My name is Mark Fairley, and the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI, the Board of Regents. For more information, go to kuci.org. Today, our show will be a little different from our normal programming. Today, we will be speaking with a special guest who is part of our hotline team. Now, before we get into that, I just want to clarify the hotline. It is not a dating site.
That's true, Mark. We won't set you up with a spouse or potential spouse, and we won't match up your plant with a partner either.
Oh, very good. Our special guest name is Linda Guinness, and Linda is a co-lead of our hotline, and she's going to explain to you what it is. Welcome, Linda, and sorry for the setup on the dating site thing. This is not a dating site.
That's right, and we won't tell you how to cook your butterball turkey either.
Okay, you've been a master gardener for how long?
I was in the class of 2012. So
really?
Yes, I have my five-year pin now.
Wow.
Time flies.
Time does go by, doesn't it? I remember when you came and helped me one time with the Speakers Bureau after you had just joined. And I could tell then, and I told Tom, that this lady is special. So, and that has proven correct. See, my choices are not always wrong.
Okay, for you radio people, my cheeks are turning red right now.
Yeah. What did you do before you became a master gardener?
I was in elementary education in Santa Ana Unified School District for 37 years. I was a teacher, I was a reading specialist, and I was also an administrator during that time.
That is amazing. What a career. A giver. Teachers are special people, in my opinion. What motivated you to become a master gardener?
Well, when I was still working, I started on Saturday morning. Sometimes I would go to garden classes at our various local nurseries, and I found a few speakers that were really good, and, Cal Poly background and had degrees in horticulture, and I got interested in gardening. So I also had a big tree I had taken out, and I had to replace my lawn and got into drought tolerant. And so when I retired, I thought, look into master gardeners. Before, I had gone to garden shows, and the master gardeners always had a booth, and they were always recruiting new members, and I said later, and the later finally came. So I was so glad that I got accepted. It's a little competitive to get into the class. You have to fill out an application and go for an interview, and I was just thrilled to be in it and find so many other people who like gardening. It's a very stimulating group. There were other retired teachers, people who were in nursing, people who are out in the corporate world. Was just a great way to meet a lot of other interesting people. And we share a love of nature and plants and animals. And it's just been a really great time.
Well, I know you spend a lot of time. And the hotline is not an easy process being a part of it. You just don't give information off the top of your head.
No, we don't. The hotline was started by Mary Steele quite a few years ago, who found it was a good way to service a lot of people in Orange County with their gardening questions, because the county's pretty big, and we don't make house calls as master gardeners. So she got that started, and Karen Ward was her co-lead. And when Mary found it was time for her to retire, I stepped in, and Karen's still the co-lead there and is really knows the history. But what we tell people when they want to do work on the hotline, volunteer, we do provide information that is based on research. So we won't give you the, grandma's home remedy or something we tried at home and we thought might work, or, spray vinegar on everything. We primarily use UC resources, UC doesn't cover everything because there's not research going on all the houseplants we have and a lot of our horticultural things in the yard. We look at other universities, so we look for websites that have an EDU at the end. And there's extensions all through the whole United States, and some different areas will do research on different plants. We make use of that. And then we find other organizations sometimes that have information that we know is dependable and reliable. Like for roses, we look at the Rose Society, or for plumerias, we look at the Plumeria Society. So we draw our information from that. And a lot of the things we do are, there's not a secret vault we go to that where we have information that no one else could access. But we've learned how to look and how to find this information. And since some questions come up repeatedly, we know the answers. We know as soon as we have a certain question that's been asked like 10 times before, we already have that all ready to go, the answer all ready for people.
And it seems like questions that come up are really seasonal, aren't they?
A lot of them are, because different pests are active at different times of the year. Different fruits come ripe at different times of the year. Flowers bloom at different times. So we have, and in California, with us having a year-round growing season, there's always something different going on.
We are different than just about any part of the country.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Even the hot climates down in Florida, they don't grow all year.
Yep, and they get rain at different times of year. So we have our Mediterranean climate here is quite unique to the United States.
Right. And as a result of winds, et cetera, we oftentimes get pests other parts of the country. And sometimes we can't answer the questions because the scientists don't have the answer.
That's true. There's a new pest introduced into California every 40 days. And sometimes they don't, they manage to multiply and cause a problem before anybody even knows they're there. And the reason that happens is so many more people travel all over, and a lot of people like to bring souvenirs home, or they'll bring fruit in, or they'll bring a plant that looks perfectly healthy, but that plant, there might be eggs from some kind of pest in that plant. We found that eggs have come over on pallets. We get so many imports from China now, there's sometimes eggs in those wooden pallets that come in too. So we do have a lot of new insects being introduced, and the people who work on the hotline, we subscribe to a newsletter that comes out from the university's Agricultural Natural Resources Division that's on pests in the environment. So we could keep pretty up to date on a lot of the new pests that are coming out. The only downside is sometimes we know the pests are there, but no one's found a way to deal with them yet.
Isn't that the truth? So maybe a good tip would be don't introduce or bring in plants from other areas or wood from other areas. Any ideas on that?
Oh, yeah, that's very true. I know people sometimes feel it's, our rules are too strict. There's agricultural inspection stations at the borders, between even California and Arizona and other states. And what you might think is harmless and innocent can end up causing a big problem, like we saw with citrus greening disease. A person who belonged to a garden club and really loved plants went to China, got some cyanwood from his friends there, put it in a suitcase and brought it back, and you can't tell from the little branch there's anything wrong with that plant. It looked like a perfectly normal branch, and gave it to his garden club members to graft onto their citrus trees. And that wood had the HLB disease, the citrus greening disease, in the wood already. So when the little insects, the aged in citrus psyllids, went to those leaves and they, suck plant juices out and then they fly somewhere else, they were transmitting the disease. And that's pretty much how they feel that the citrus greening disease was introduced into California.
And it's just about every place here in Southern California. I know it's more prevalent in some areas than others.
Yes, in fact, we just recently found out about a new service that we wanted the hotline to publicize to people. We've been getting a lot of citrus questions. There's a free tree removal available to people who live in the quarantine zone. In parts of northern Orange County around La Habra are in a quarantine zone. You would know if you're in a quarantine zone because you probably would have been notified by mail or had people coming to look at your trees. And if you're not sure, you can look online and look up citrus quarantine zone, and you could find a map. But there's a, you can have your trees removed for free. They don't have to have the disease yet. It's sort of like making a fire break. You know, when there's a fire, the fire people want to remove all the fuel from around the area so the fire can't spread. And that's a similar idea, where they know that in around La Habra area, La Habra Heights, Hacienda Heights, that there's trees with the disease. So they would, it's voluntary right now for removing the citrus from that area so the insects can't keep spreading it further. And that would be at
RemoveMyCitrus.com. RemoveMyCitrus.com. If you haven't chance, write that down. And if you have some citrus in your backyard or maybe a neighbor or two, you can pass that information on or keep it available, because cost of you removing your tree or having somebody remove it can be pretty expensive too.
Even for like a medium-sized citrus, it could cost a couple $100s if you wanted to have an arborist or just a tree removal service take it out. But I think the interest here is, I think this is, you know, funded by the
agriculture.
You know, agriculture, yeah, to try to
citrus industry,
yeah.
Who are trying to.
They want to contain the disease before it spreads further.
Because it can destroy, eventually, all the citrus.
Yeah, there's some concern with, you know, hurricanes in Florida. They have the high winds there that a lot of these insects carrying the disease could just be blown further from where they are now and spread the disease even more. So fortunately, we don't have that here, but, you know, they do fly around. And I noticed there was an ad for a local nursery chain recently that had citrus on sale, and they did list certain stores would not be selling any citrus. So
because of quarantine areas?
Because of the quarantine area. So if you live up in that part of Orange County where that's in quarantine area, you can't move citrus from that area, and you won't be able to buy a tree at this time.
And as a result of this, the cost of citrus trees, young ones, that you want to plant, because the nurseries, it's an extra cost for them, they're going to pass that cost on.
I'm sure they would. Fortunately, I have my citrus trees in. I'm far away from the quarantine zone, so I'm just going to have to wait and see what happens. But, you know, the people who live up closer to the area, you know, keep your eyes open and check your trees. We've seen that on the hotline. Usually people are alarmed. Most people are alarmed needlessly. It turns out to be something really minor wrong with their tree. But this is the first year we've seen some photos come into the hotline that actually did look like they might have the HLB disease, citrus greening disease, and we refer them to the county agricultural commissioner.
And I'm wondering, if you have, is a young tree more susceptible? If you know this, I don't know. I've heard this. A younger tree is more susceptible to the disease than a older, more mature tree. You know, it's just like anything. We like young fruit. They taste mm-hmm. better. Likewise, the pests are not...
The insect that spreads this disease is the Asian citrus psyllid.
Right.
And psyllids, insects have basically two different types of mouth parts. They can chew things and make holes, or they suck the juice out of the plants.
Right.
And this is an insect that sucks the juice out. So like all the other insects that are sucking insects, they do tend to go for new growth more because there's more moisture there.
Sure.
So that's one reason we tell people, you know, we're coming into the fall now, that if you want to prune your citrus tree, wait until October or so. That's a better time to prune it, because now there's still insect activity here, and if you prune it now and new growth starts coming up, you're just giving the insects more to eat. So wait until the weather starts cooling off and the insect activity has dropped a lot, and then your new growth won't be injured.
And I'm wondering, when you're pruning your citrus, and citrus doesn't ordinarily have to be pruned, but it's a good thing to do to keep your fruit within hand reach, so you don't have to use a ladder to to get to your fruit. Any disposal recommendations that come to mind that are important in disposing of?
No, because right now citrus isn't like other fruit trees where you have to look at where the new growth will come out and where the fruit will be produced. And, you know, apples and apricots and everything has their own pruning
methods. Peaches and
citrus mainly plums. You're just taking out dead branches because there's always going to be some twin dead dieback. So you're basically pruning out the dead branches. If it's getting too tall, you might want to take down some of the height. You should never prune more than one third at a time. The little tree will
good
going
advice.
To shock too much. So if you're bringing it down a little bit in height, you know, plan over the course of a few years to bring it down a little bit at a time.
That's good.
But it's mostly, you know, getting the dead branches off and thinning a little bit.
Making it look nice.
Looking for the water sprouts, which are the plants that go straight up vertically. And you want to trim those off because they won't produce any fruit and they'll just take a lot of energy out of the plant. So pruning on citrus is pretty minor compared to most other fruit trees. But we're coming up into the fall, which is the best time of year to do it.
Good advice.
And as far as disposing of things, if your tree had the citrus greening disease, like you got it the way to get it identified is through the county agricultural commissioner.
Right.
Now, we just make a suggestion on the hotline. Someone has to actually come and take the tissue sample from the tree. They'll rip that tree out. If that has it, they will take the tree out whether you want to or not. So they'll take it and it'll be gone. So if you're just trimming in your yard now, just, you know, throw it in your green waste bin.
Good. Thank you.
No worries there.
No worries. Just want to take a moment to let our listeners know you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And we will continue on with our hotline. This is very interesting, Linda. Thank you for doing this. And I know you get emails in all the time. And you don't just work on this team alone, do you?
No, we have a lot of people involved. We have what we
call... Maybe you could mention them.
Yes, I will. We have our poster people, and they're the people who go into our email box and check our answering machine, because we do have a hotline for people who aren't into computers. They can phone us at 949-809-9760.
Could you repeat that one more
time? I will. 949-809-9760. And that's our hotline. You won't. You'll be talking to an answering machine. So be sure to leave. Try to speak clearly. Leave a contact information back there, and then that will be transcribed by our poster people. And our poster people are Karen Ward, who's also the co-lead, Norma Yarbrough, Elizabeth Bancroft, and Mary Steele, who is our founder.
Right.
Still posting, and then we have a whole team of people that are assigned different days of the week, and we'll field your questions. And Mary Ellen Fuhlman's our champ right now. She has several shifts, and she's answering lots and lots of questions. We also have Mary Zombeck, Don Grime, Linda Pluta, Susan Mack, Stephen Lau, Becky Tuchet, Cole Wilkins, Sherry Sierra Rocco, and Marie Connors. And I sure hope that's everybody. If I forgot someone, it's unintentional, I assure you. And I have a couple shifts, too.
Very good. Well, I know I see your name all the time, so. And all these other wonderful
Master Gardeners. The great thing about it is we all help each other. And even for people who, Master Gardeners who aren't on the hotline, we have a membership of over 300 people. And if we get stuck on a question, we could ask for help. And we know there's people who are really good at irrigation. And we know there's people who have knowledge about specific plants. We know Sherry's really good at identifying plants. People send us pictures and say, this is a pretty plant I have. What's the name of it? And that's sometimes kind of challenging. If you do have a plant you want to get identified, whether it's a tree or some perennial, or you saw something in a friend's yard and you want to go buy it at the nursery, what's really helpful is, first of all, make sure the picture's in focus. Sometimes
that's a key.
That's pretty important, yeah. Blurry pictures, we can't tell. And if it's like from 200 feet away, it's a little hard to tell, too. So it helps if we have one picture of the overall plant. If it has flowers, a lot of plants are identified by the flower part. So it's helpful to see the flowers.
Good point.
If it's a tree, what the bark looks like, the leaves, if it has any seeds, and like the whole leaf structure. We could look at a plant and see whether the leaves are on the stem alternate or if they're opposite each other, if they're palmate or pinnate. A lot of those things will help us narrow it down and figure out what it is. And, of course, there's some plants you could just glance at it and know right off the top of your head what it is. But we do have a lot of people to draw from to help identify your plants, and a lot of Google experts out there, too, who search and spend a lot of time looking. And we sometimes are asked to identify caterpillars, moths, you know, and especially insect pests.
Yes, not all of us are experts. I consider myself really a novice, and I love to and am always looking for ways to identify. And when I read your responses to questions that come up on identification, I'm always interested in hearing that. And I think just about anybody who has a gardening interest has an interest in identifying plants.
And one way that really helps narrow things down is to know what plant the bug is on. If you know the host plant, a plant is only a host to certain insects. Insects are more fussy than you would think about what they eat. There's some that will eat almost anything, like the Polyphagus shothole borer we've heard a lot about. Polyphagus means it eats a whole bunch of different things. So that could be, there's over 50 hosts now for that insect, which is why it's such a menace right now. But there's other insects, like, you know, people who like butterflies, you know, your little monarch caterpillars will only eat milkweed. And so they just have that one plant that's a host. So if you don't know what a pest is and you want to send us a picture, it helps to know what plant they're eating, too.
What they're eating.
Because that'll help narrow it down right off the bat. We could eliminate a lot of similar bugs.
It's one of the tips that I give to people when I'm doing workshops on vegetable gardening.
And that's Mark's area of expertise. He's a square foot garden expert. And I know that was how I got started in vegetable gardens.
It just makes sense. Where there is a great deal of food for pests to eat, that's where they're going to go.
Yep.
Because it's easy and they don't have competition. So if you are a vegetable grower and mix up what you're planting, plant them close by, make sure they're compatible. But if you do that, they might eat a little bit, but they don't have anything else to eat. Go on to someplace else where there is less competition, and they can get more food easier. Plants are like our pests are like us.
Yep, they don't want to be caught since they're stealing food from us. Most pests are pretty clever. They don't stay out in the open where we see them. A lot of times they're under the leaves, and I know we sometimes will get people in concerned about their plants in decline. They say, I don't see any bugs, but I don't know what's wrong with it. Well, the insects aren't stupid. I mean, some of them are pretty dumb. Those big beetles that fly around real slow,
seem
pretty dumb. And they'll fly into the wall and the window, and they're easy to catch. But most bugs are pretty clever, and they've, you know, adapted. They survive because they have these adaptations, and they will live under the leaves. They're not where you could see them easily. So if you're looking at your garden, standing up, walking around, you might not see them. But pick up a leaf and turn it over, and you might be surprised what's on the underside of that leaf.
Especially early in the morning, right?
Yeah, early in the morning, some things go out at dusk. Moths are more active at dusk.
Right.
But underneath there, and some of them are so tiny you wouldn't see them. The chili thrip, that's such a problem in roses. You won't notice it, you know, it won't be visible to you. It's not microscopic, but it's so tiny you probably wouldn't notice it until after it's already done its damage.
Yeah, and unless you get close to it.
Yeah.
So it's good to know your plant.
And with us, you know, we've just gone through a hot spell with a lot of hot weather. Spider mites really will proliferate. We've got a lot of inquiries in the hotline about plants. They say, I don't know what this is. I don't see anything on it. Spider mites aren't spiders. They're mites. So mites are really, really tiny, like smaller than fleas even. If you hold a white sheet of paper up under the leaf and tap it, you might see some little black specks come down. Those are the spider mites.
Interesting.
The way you can tell that you have spider mites is one is by stippling on the leaves, which means little tiny dots, like your plant leaf has a rash or something. And another way is by the webbing. That's why they're called spider mites. They make a kind
make
of webbing.
Make a little web, huh?
And sometimes you'll see, we got a picture in a couple years ago, someone's tomato plants were covered with what looked like quilt batting because the spider mites were so out of control. One good way to deal with that is hose off your plants, especially the underside of the leaves. If you do that several days in succession, you could really knock the population down. If that doesn't work, then you go to your insecticidal soaps and neem oil. But, you know, the most important thing in the gardener, most important thing to have in the garden is the gardener. Because if you're the eyes and ears there, and when you see something wrong, you could take care of the problem before it becomes too big.
And, of course, as master gardeners, we're always emphasizing the use of IPM.
Yes, integrated pest management, which means we want to do what has the least impact on the environment. So we start off with cultural controls, keeping your garden neat and tidy, making sure plants have good air circulation around them. That cuts down on insects too. Sometimes you'll find a plant that's been hedged, is, you know, trimmed really neat like a topiary, and has a lot of dead stuff in the middle, and there'll be spider mites in there because, you know, they like that dense foliage in there. You'll see a lot of dead leaves in there. And then there's mechanical control, just, you know, stepping on things, picking them off, hosing them off, you know, just physically removing them, so you're just attacking that one pest without upsetting the rest of the environment.
Right. And then the third, and if then everything else doesn't work?
Then we go to, say, chemical controls, but we try to use organic things first. Everything organic does not necessarily mean it's totally harmless. Because, you know, there's ricin is made out of castor beans, and, you know, that's the worst poison ever, and that's organic. But we use things that will just focus in on those pests, like insecticidal soap. Some people will use dish soap. The reason we don't recommend dish soap, not that it's not effective, but that the soap companies keep changing their formulation so often, we're not always sure what's in there. There's so many different brands and kinds. So we say if you get an insecticidal soap, they basically will coat the body of the insect they touch, and that they can't breathe through their spiracles, and then that's a way of combating them. We want to make sure that we also don't want to spray things like spinosad, which is approved as an organic pesticide, but we don't want to spray it when bees are active. It's not good for bees. So that would be sprayed like at dusk or in the evening when bees aren't around. So as long as you're not spraying it on the bees, you could spray it on the other harmful insects you might have. But if you're out there gardening a lot and trimming and pruning and hosing things off once in a while, you don't usually have to get to some of these later steps.
You're already taking care of the issue.
We try to avoid that, you know, if at all possible.
Keep it clean. Take off dead branches that have turned brown, etc. Look at the shoots, get them off. You'll be curing half the problems, probably.
Yeah.
Just by little maintenance. That's why it's good to be near your garden.
Yeah, and also sometimes the overuse of really harsh chemicals actually is to your disadvantage. Because if you spray broad-spectrum insecticide, which is something that will kill everything, it's not focused on one insect, you'll also kill the beneficial insects. And once that insecticide wears off, it seems that some of the pests, the less desirable ones, their population increases a lot faster than the beneficials. So it's almost like you're shooting yourself in the foot. If you are using these broad-spectrum insecticides frequently, you're better off letting nature take care of the pests, letting the beneficial insects take care of them, and then just dealing with the population when it becomes a problem. And then you could deal with it in ways that don't impact the environment so much.
Use good gardening techniques. If you ever have an opportunity, go to a master gardener workshop that's going on. You will get so many good tips.
Now, we have speakers
and
in a lot.
Ideas.
Mm-hmm. We're out in a lot of different parts of the county. We have lectures out at Shipley Nature Center in Huntington Beach. For people who are more centrally located, we're at the Great Park in Irvine at the Farm and Food Lab. We're usually not so much in the winter, but for the rest of the year, we have monthly lectures out there. We're expanding down south. I know there's things going on at the Murray Senior Center in Mission Viejo. We've got just throughout the county. We'll have speakers coming out. So check our website.
What is the website address?
Our website is, you can find it by Orange County Master Gardeners or
Just Google.
mgorange@ucanr.edu. And our website will have a calendar on it. So you can see.
Could you repeat that one more time?
It's mgorange@ucanr.edu.
Very good. And Google is a great thing. It knows everything. So it will find us also.
It'll find us. Be careful. When you're Googling everything, you know Google, there's the internet is not edited.
So right.
Look for those EDU sites to be for more reliable information, because you'll find all kinds of, let's say, ineffective things, unusual.
Or eyeball. Not what you're looking for.
Not what you're looking for, or things that people, you know, it's not really tested. My one pet peeve you'll see all over the internet is growing plants and pots with no holes in them, like making an herb collection in mason jars. Those people take the pictures like 5 minutes after they put the plants in the ground, and they won't show you what they look like a month later when they're all dead.
That's a whole nother issue, isn't it?
It is.
But let me just take a moment here to identify our station. We are at KUCI 88.9. FM in Irvine. And we've got a little time. I love the advice you're giving people.
Do you want a little bit on trees?
I would love to hear something on trees, and I know that is one of the big issues in Southern California. In fact, all of California, since we've had the drought and what are going on. And then maybe we can get into some of the most frequently asked questions, if you have some available, that are coming in right now during late summer, early fall, and maybe this will give some of our listeners an insight to where we're at here.
Yeah, I was looking at, you know, what a lot of our questions have been the past few months in preparation to come here, and we have been getting a lot about trees. We have, because coming out of a drought, our governor said we're out of the drought, but we don't know if it's going to rain this coming year or not. So we're always on the precipice there, you know. Our rainfall here in Orange County averages 15 inches a month, which puts us puts us a little bit above being a desert, but not that many inches more. So we do have to look at trees. People like to plant trees from all over the world, and not all of them grow well here. So we've been getting a lot of tree questions, especially birch trees this year.
Really?
I think after 5 years of drought, a lot of people have the birches, which are beautiful trees.
Absolutely.
Lovely, you know, interesting bark. But they're hard to grow here in Orange County because
climate conditions.
The climate, they're riparian trees. They grow where there's a lot more water. And so we've been having a lot of people, you know, complain about, you know, what's happening to my birch. Or some people put new birches in, and they put three birches in, and two of them are already dead. And so it's problematic. What we really advocate is trying to plant trees for the climate instead of trying to make the climate fit the tree that you like. And that's hard to do because we have people here from other parts of the country who have their favorite trees. And
absolutely. You know, people, I hear them complaining about, oh, gee, the Japanese maples. I bought some and they're dead. Yet there are areas here. I know one of our master gardeners, he's got several hundred Japanese maples. He just loves Japanese maples.
And sometimes it's the variety, too. Even within a certain species, there are some varieties that are more adapted, more drought tolerant. Like crepe myrtles, we know crepe myrtle's a good tree for this area. It doesn't get really big. It doesn't take a lot of water, but some of them are very prone to mildew. You could find within the crepe myrtle family, you could find some that are less prone to mildew. That will grow easier on the coast. You can get the pretty flowers, the seasonal color. They have the interesting bark, too. And, you know, look for the varieties that are less prone to mildew.
That you'd like, yeah.
So one of them is tree choice. That helps a lot. And irrigation, just because we got a good rain this winter doesn't mean all our problems are over. a lot of those trees that went through the drought, their roots are, they have a lot more roots close to the surface because there wasn't anything down there. You know, people were watering their lawns, and so the first top couple of inches of dirt had water in them. And
that's where the roots are going to be.
And I saw a tree fell down a couple blocks from my house, and people thought it looked fine. I walked by there, and I could see the ground was mushy, and it had root rot because there was lawn growing right up to the trunk of the tree. The ground was really wet, and it takes a while for root rot to get going, but it finally did, and the tree just fell over on someone's car, unfortunately.
Ooh.
But we have to look for that when we're growing trees and lawn. People have been asking who want to put trees in. We're coming up into fall, which is a good planting season. We say in the fall, it's good to do your planting now, be ready to dig your holes in before it starts, hopefully starts raining in the fall. In California, our November is usually when our rainy season begins. So if you get the plants in then, you put in your new plants, they'll have the benefit of all the rain through the wintertime because we don't get summer rain.
And if I am hearing you correctly, do your research first.
Oh, yeah.
Do your research. See what you like. Check with a good nurseryman. We have plenty of good nursery around here where you can both buy, but do the research and get somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, which has a big agriculture and horticulture department,
yes,
they have an online tree selector guide, which is very helpful. We refer people to it on the hotline all the time when they're saying, what tree should I plant? And you can go through there and say what size tree, what characteristics you like. And, of course, it's geared towards Southern California and, you know, where you live, and it'll give you a choice of trees. So we find that's really helpful. Sunset Magazine also in the front, it has our Sunset Western Garden Book, has a good reference section. You could find that at your local library if you don't have one at home. And it will tell you trees to plant by pools, trees for shade, trees that won't get, you know, small trees. A lot of us here don't have acre lots or 2 acre lots where we could put in a big oak, which is a beautiful native tree. We're looking for small trees, and also you might want to go with a shrub. Some shrubs can get up to the size of a small tree, and that could satisfy your desire to have a little tree in your backyard without ending up with roots all over the place and having the tree take over the whole yard.
Where you put it is probably one of the key things.
Yep.
Likewise, so knowing root spread, the way it works on a slope, so many different issues. Mm-hmm. That's why it's important to go to a good nurseryman, but do your research, and we have that available for you on our website.
Yep, and if you have further questions, the hotline is here to help. We have a lot of resources. We'll recommend don't plant the tree too close to your house.
Isn't that the truth?
And don't plant it right over the water line from the meter to your house.
Yeah, well, that's probably one of the biggest reasons that trees died from root rot.
Yep, or it's also because it could damage your line. Yes, if you have to have that.
That's
expensive. That line crack, you know, the tree roots can get in there and clog up your lines, but the sewer line or if they're wrapped around your water line and you have to have that repaired, your poor tree will probably have to be removed. So keep it a little bit away from the water lines you have running under the ground. And then if you do take a tree out that's diseased, make sure that the wood is not thrown into compost or you don't just mulch it. If you have a diseased tree, we have a lot of the trees now all over Orange County that have had the shot hole borers, and that tree, the wood should be solarized or chipped to pieces smaller than 1 inch.
And if you want to find out how solarization works, go on the website.
Yes,
we have it's best. There's good instructions, and it's very specific. If you have diseased tree that you have taken out, and it's going to be on your property because it's too big to take out, solarization and chipping will ensure that.
Yeah, the problem is if the tree comes down on its own accord, or say if you have cut it down in pieces, you leave the pieces of wood there that have the beetles in them, that you're just giving them a place to hang out till they find a new tree. So
there
it's important to take care of it, cover it up with the plastic and solarize it, or chip it into little pieces.
Trees are good time to plant.
Yeah, coming up to the fall now, and you'll see if you really like edibles, now is the time a lot of nurseries are taking orders for fruit trees. So if you like fruit trees, usually in the fall, if you want a specific tree, you don't want to just pick one off the lot there like a car. You want
right.
to order it in advance with just the kind you want. A lot of our local nurseries here do take orders. They start at this time of year, start taking orders for the trees, which then are usually delivered after Christmas. That in the winter time is a good time to plant them. We plant them when they're dormant. Doesn't apply to citrus or
Absolutely.
The trees or like guavas, which are green all year round. But
right. But peaches and all your deciduous plums
fruits.
And stone fruit
stone
trees.
Stone fruits and pomes.
Yes, and oftentimes if you plant peaches, by next spring you'll might even have some.
We're looking long term when we put stone fruit in the ground. First year is usually you're pruning. Strip those fruits off. Nurseries love to sell trees with fruit on them. If you order bare root, of course, you're going to get a bare tree with bare twigs
Correct.
And nothing. But sometimes they'll sell the trees in the winter for the people who didn't order them in advance, or they'll sell them in the spring for people who like the plant spur of the moment. And, of course, like flowers, they carry flowering plants they carry when they're in bloom. If you want to find a spring bloomer in the fall, they probably won't carry it because people like to buy things with flowers on them. Same for fruit trees. You like to buy something that has fruit on it. Citrus doesn't really, you know, that's pretty
right.
much an all-year-round thing. And
right.
But the stone fruit, usually we take all the strip the fruit off the first year so the plant could put all its energy into just growing. And then years after that, you'll start off with a few fruit. It takes 4 or 5 years to really
Oftentimes.
Start getting a good crop off your trees.
This on certain...
Pretty much on the stone fruit. Apples are pretty fast.
And peaches are, too.
Mm-hmm. But some of them, like maybe the second or third year, you'll start getting a few. Sometimes the fruit isn't as good quality, and you'll say, oh, it's not what I expected, but by that fourth or fifth year, the quality improves, too. And you would think, you know, well, off the same tree, you would think you'd always get the same fruit, but somehow it gets better once the tree is really mature and has those roots in the ground, the quality of the fruit improves, too.
It does take time.
But it's nothing like picking.
But it's well worth it.
Yes, nothing like picking some fresh fruit off your tree and eating it right then and there.
Right then and there. Nothing tastes better. It's kind of like homegrown tomatoes.
Yep. So this is the time of the year where if you haven't already pruned back your stone fruit trees, that if you want to control height, this is the time of year to get them for height. You'll do your more serious pruning in the wintertime when you're looking for, you know, where the growth is going to be and get in there when you can see what you're doing when there's no leaves on.
Any other suggestions as far as fall growing? Maybe vegetables?
Great. Mm-hmm. Fall is, we usually hear about, you read on vegetable, you know, forums or things that are meant for the whole United States. There's the spring vegetables and the summer vegetables. And we have longer growing seasons here. So we just call them cool season and warm season. We get two cool seasons. So there's things that in some parts of the country, they would just grow in the spring. We also could grow in the fall.
And that it's a great time to plant in early fall for Thanksgiving.
Yep. And for right now, you know, toward the end of summer and early fall, we know we're still getting a lot of hot weather. Sometimes we get Santa winds, you know, this time of year, and it's kind of hot. But the soil temperature is what really influences how the seeds grow a lot. So the soil's nice and warm, and it's really good, gives them a good start to sprout and start growing if you're growing from seed. And then by the time the days are getting shorter and it's getting cooler, they'll be more established, and you can get a good crop. You can have some vegetables for your Thanksgiving dinner if you get those seeds in now. Or if you don't want to plant seeds and want to grow some starts, maybe wait a few more weeks and get your small little pony packs or six packs at the nursery. And get those brassicas in, your cauliflower, broccoli. It's a great time to grow lettuce now.
Absolutely.
Lettuce. In the summer, it's pretty tough because the lettuce will bolt, but we're getting into good lettuce season now.
When it isn't so hot all at once, the plant kind of slows down. We have less sunlight during the day. Plant slows down, and so it lasts longer.
Yep. Mark's really an expert. He's grown a lot more vegetables than I have. But you
deal with it every day. Peas are wonderful.
Yeah, peas. Get the peas in the ground.
Snap. Sugar
carrots.
Snap peas.
And get some carrots in now.
Onions. Onions are an interesting. They seem to grow at their own pace.
They do. I bought an onions, a little six pack of onions, and I don't know what I was thinking. Each six pack has this whole little clump in there, but you can't plant the whole clump. You have to separate
those.
So you look at this six pack of onions, and there's probably 100 little plants in there.
Right.
You have to pull all those apart and space them. And I got a little tired of doing it after a while. But if you give them space, I got some really nice round. They were red onions, and
it's
some
amazing.
Nice, you know, like I'd get at the grocery store, and the ones I didn't that were planted too close together, then they were tiny little things. But, you know, it does. They take their own time. So you have to, you know, being out there and looking at them and checking on them, checking for the bugs. If you want to, now, those cute little white butterflies we see everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
They are the white cabbage butterfly.
Right.
They'll go on your lettuce, and they're around all pretty much year-round. They really like these cool season vegetables, though. So I have found if you don't want them all over your broccoli, they don't seem to like the cauliflower quite as much as the broccoli, but they really love the broccoli. Love Brussels sprouts. Get some tulle.
I even like broccoli
sprouts. Get some of that tulle netting. You can go to a fabric store. There's still a few fabric stores around, and you could. It'll last a few years before it disintegrates in the sun, but put that over your plants, and then those little moths can't get in there to lay their eggs on there. And it's those little inchworm things that go in there. Aphids are pretty small, so those you will have to hose out. But keep those cabbage butterflies off. It will really give you'll have a lot more for you to eat besides just letting the insects eat it. Good time for kale too.
Good advice.
Kale and Swiss chard.
And cabbage.
Cool season
are
friends.
Thing is, cool season you eat the whole thing.
You know what, Mark? For people who really want an excellent chart of planting vegetables, that's on our website as well.
Good advice.
Up at the top of our website, there's a part that says edibles, and click on that edibles section, and there's a section on vegetable growing. You'll find the chart in there of what to plant what month. And also, if you go on the side, it says free publications. A lot of good information there. The free publications tab will also give you that vegetable
right
growing chart.
Right available for you.
So there's plenty of information there.
And one of the great things about it, about the website and getting information on what plants to grow at one time, it's meant for our location. And if you have a garden book that has been published in the East where they have a great deal of rain or snow or sleet or cold weather, it's different than where we are.
Yes, and this chart that we have on our website was put together by local master gardeners who are really made it specific for us. So it's pertinent to us. It's not like when you get the seed packet that's planted, you know, the information there has to be for the whole United States. So it gives you very general information
right.
about when to plant things. So if you want to know for us in Orange County, and of course we have our own microclimates too, it'll be different for people who live near the ocean than people who live up in Fullerton. There's
certainly
some leeway
is.
There, but this will give you a general idea of what grows at what time of year here in Orange County.
Access that website.
Yep, a lot of good information.
Your questions will be answered. And that's what I do when my local neighbors say, oh, gee, avocado, go on our website.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get better information that I'm going to give you off the top of my head.
And it's also really helpful to us because we have found some new pests that weren't previously identified as being present in Orange County. We had a couple Years ago, someone found something on their tomato we thought was a pest that didn't exist here. So, of course, we will refer it to other people. We have an entomologist we can call on, Dr. Kabashima.
Right.
And they did confirm that it was this pest that had previously not been in Orange County. It was on his tomato plants. Well, and we'll see things come in. Sometimes people in community gardens, because their gardens are so close, they'll have a lot of the same pests go through.
That's
and
true.
We'll find things. And new pests on ficus. You think ficus is a pretty impervious plant. And we start getting questions. People were having problems with ficus, and that's one of, there's like three new ficus pests in California within,
really?
Within the past year or so.
Well, they can eat all the ficuses up. I hate them.
Well, some people,
but
really,
that's okay. But some people will really like them,
have,
and that's the difference in gardening.
But that's what's the nice thing about being on the hotline. People will find things that maybe weren't weren't a problem a year ago or 6 months ago,
well,
and then we can reference that material we get on the new pests that are coming in and connect them up with that information.
The hotline does such a magnificent job, and it opens up to how many people do we have here in Orange County? 1.5 million
mm-hmm.
or more, to all the areas without being stuck in a one thing for all type of climate. As you say, we have many microclimates around.
Yes. If people growing things.
Even in yards. There are microclimates.
Oh, yeah. You have your sunny spots and your shady spots and your drier spots and wetter spots and places that are exposed to the wind. So, we really do all kinds of questions, whether they're pests or, people just getting started or people who have a lot of expertise. There's always, people like to ask questions about gardening. And we only have, the only limitations we have is we can't recommend any specific products. And we can't recommend any specific people, like an arborist.
Right.
We could refer them to Trees Are Good and find their own arborist, but we can't do that.
Places where they can find, and then they can research.
Yeah.
And you got to find an arborist that you like, too.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's the most important thing. We've gone over trees and some fall things. Anything else that sticks out as far as you are concerned, questions that you've been getting that we've talked about pests and
we've had a few lately with sharpshooters. And sharpshooters, as you know, back in Orange County history, Orange County before the groves were put in was supposed to be grape country.
Right.
Until Pierce's disease, which was spread by the sharpshooter, Pierce's disease wiped out the vines. But we have a lot of backyard grape growers here, and
yes,
people were concerned about that. And even on plumeria, someone had a sharpshooter on their plumeria. So it's a pest that we hadn't seen a lot of questions on for a long period of time, and now just within the last month or so, a couple people were concerned about sharpshooters.
What is a sharpshooter?
It's there's different kinds of sharpshooters. The glassy wing sharpshooter is the one that spread.
Primarily.
Yeah, it's a sucking insect. Once again, a lot of those sucking insects, like the ACP, the Asian citrus psyllid, when they suck the juice out of an infected plant and they fly somewhere else, and like a mosquito spreads disease on people, they spread disease among plants. But that's a bug that's been around for a while, or an insect, I should say. It's not a bug, actually.
Right.
We have pest notes on that, so we already have information we could refer people to.
So for more information,
contact our hotline.
Contact the hotline or the website.
Look up ANR IPM, and you'll get to the IPM resource that we use. And you could look up your plant, and it'll tell you all the insects that plant is a host of, and you can take it from there.
What other things are great to grow during the fall? I know one of my favorites is grass. I know master gardeners in our drought are always knocking down, taking out grass, but I love grass.
Grass is a good filter, actually, for a lot of pollutants. So, and, of course, grass, we need grass for kids to play on, for sports and things. Key is to get some grasses that don't require as much water. There's some really beautiful ones out there that look, have, even if you like a fine blade grass, there's paspalums out there. We have some at our South Coast Research and Extension Center
yes,
on display there. And there's ground cover. So if you like grass, there are lower water use grasses out there, and the grass do serve a good function in our environment.
So don't give up on grass.
No, bluebirds love it too, because bluebirds, that's where they get all their little grubs and insects from. So they like those big grassy areas, golf courses and parks. Could
yes.
find some bluebirds hanging
absolutely.
Out there.
Absolutely, and it's always cooler where you have
yes.
grass.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. And anything else that is...
I just want to encourage people to visit our website. If you'd like to come out and see Master Gardeners in person, there's a calendar. You'll have to scroll down a little bit to see on the lower right-hand side of our website. But we're in different parts of Orange County, usually for free. Some places might charge a very nominal fee for their if there's a material fee if we're doing some hands-on thing. But and we are also available for your garden clubs.
Thank you very much, Linda. What an informative. We could do this for a couple more hours.
Oh, yeah.
But we've done enough for today mm-hmm. as our show is limited.
Yes.
So thank you very much. Listen to us next week.